Welcome to Smashing the Plateau. We help you get unstuck so you can do what you love and get paid what you're worth. I'm your host, David Schreiner Khan.
That's where I see people start to want to give up is, you know, they brought on one or two clinicians and they're paying for a VA to get the systems up. But once that system is established, then you can start to scale.
Today on episode 444 of Smashing the Plateau, I'm here with practice consultant and podcaster, Joe Sanok. I'm going to ask Joe how he scaled his business and revenue, where he experiences the biggest plateaus, how to get past chaos, and much more. You can read a description of our discussion, information about Joe, including links and resources we mentioned in this episode, on our website at smashingtheplateau.com. What would you like to hear on Smashing the Plateau? Email me and let me know. That's david@smashingtheplateau.com. Or click Get in Touch on our website. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show. Please share this episode with friends and colleagues to help them smash the plateau. Now let's welcome Joe Sanok back to Smashing the Plateau. Joe has the number one podcast for private practice owners. He's a TEDx speaker, a founder of Practice of the Practice. Joe helps business owners to grow income, innovation, influence, and impact through starting, growing, and scaling a private practice. Joe, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much, David. Glad to be here.
So, Joe, you started out as a therapist in private practice. What made you decide to start a whole new business as a private practice consultant?
Yeah, you know, it was in 2012, I had been reading some business books. I remember being on this road trip with my wife as we were moving back to our hometown. And I read Guerrilla Marketing and realized I knew absolutely nothing about business, but yet was wanting to launch this private practice. And the ideas I got from that first business book that I read just really stood out to me and really set the framework for how I was going to start my business when we moved back to my hometown. And as I read a couple more books, listened to a couple podcasts, I realized that this is just stuff we never learn in graduate school. We're taught all these clinical skills. We're good at the clinical. That's awesome. But then we're thrown into the world to launch a private practice if we want to do that. And we don't know anything about business. And so if I wasn't learning that, then I was really going to just be stuck in a nonprofit job, a CMH job, working for a college, all those kind of traditional counseling jobs. But for me, I knew that I wanted to launch a practice and get that going initially for just side income. But then over time, it started to grow. And as I talked to other counselors, they were saying the same thing. They were saying, yeah, I kind of picked up a couple things here, a couple things there from this podcast or this book. But there's nowhere that has kind of all that information around the business of running a private practice. So I started just blogging on practiceofthepractice.com. I had bought the website and thought it was a good idea for a name. And people liked it. I got a couple people that subscribed to the email list. And then over time realized that I wanted to interview people that were really just doing interesting things, both within the counseling world, but outside of it. And so I launched the podcast in 2013. And really, at that point, it was just, let's just experiment with this. I'm going to see if it works, see if there's numbers that make sense. And then I remember there was a time when I left my counseling practice that at that time was just on the side. I had just upgraded to a 4-office suite, corner office, view of the water. And I went over to the community college and I was walking down the steps into the basement where my basement office was without a window. And I was going in to do counseling there. And it couldn't have been a stronger contrast at the time. And I just knew in that moment as I walked down into the basement that I had to leave. And my wife at that time was a stay-at-home mom, 2 kids. Both of our kids had heart issues. So there's a lot of things going on that said you need to have a full-time secure job. But when our second child was born, I took the full Family Medical Leave Act to work 20 hours a week and just try it out to experiment and see, could I do this thing full-time? And so really it was, you know, that 20 hours basically paid for our health insurance. And the first month away, I made the most money I had ever made. And then the next month was even higher. And then I approached my boss and I just said, you know, I've got to leave. And I left on good terms with her, but really realized that if I just said, well, what's an experiment that I can do for my private practice, but then also for my consulting? What seems like a reasonable next step? So it started with a reasonable next step was launching a podcast. From there, well, how do I capture that audience? I, you know, want an email list, so I need to build out resources. Well, now that they're on that email list, what's the reasonable next step? I guess I should offer some one-on-one coaching in some form and maybe a paid members newsletter that can monetize this a bit. And then after that, saying, well, maybe I need a mastermind group. And then the next year, a membership community. So just each step was, what's an experiment that I can do to see if it works that will give me information that then I can test it out, see if it works, and then decide, do I want to keep this thing going or do I want to kill it or downsize it? And it just seemed like the reasonable next step at each step.
So initially, you had a counseling job and you wanted to start a private practice in addition to that, and you did. And you also wanted to start a consulting practice, helping others who were running private practices all at the same time. Is that right?
Yeah. So the order was, we moved back to our hometown and I had already filed an LLC and was doing just like 2 or 3 hours a week in Kalamazoo where we lived before. So I had the LLC, the basic framework for the business. And I just rented an office on a kind of hourly basis as really just a way to pay off student loans to make a little bit higher outside of the nonprofit I was hired at. And then as that grew, that's when I started to blog about what I was learning through that process. So the next step was creating content, kind of growing that audience. And then from there, once I had an audience, I could survey them, talk to them about what was it that they wanted. And then that started to grow. But I kept that full-time job from, it would have been 2009 with the nonprofit. Then I switched over to a community college till 2014, 15, somewhere in there. But it allowed me to not feel like I was backed into the corner financially. I definitely waited way too long. But at that time, it made sense for me to stay at the full-time job. But then really, when I left, each month was better than the month before.
Yeah, so it sounds to me like in each of these instances, when you were trying something out that was new, you were testing something, you had a hunch that there was a market for what it is you were trying to offer. And you were getting some feedback from the marketplace either before you, well, actually, it sounds like in all cases, you got some feedback before you actually launched it. So the private practice, it sounds like you had some feedback that there were potentially private practice customers. And then before you launched the consulting business to teach other people how to run a private practice, it sounds like you've done some market research, got some feedback from the market about need for somebody to teach them how to run a practice.
Yeah, I think initially I would just get kind of fall in love with an idea and launch it and throw it out and then no one would purchase it. So I'd love to say at every moment I asked my audience what they wanted, but in reality, there was conferences I tried to launch. There was membership communities I tried to launch. And I had to experiment with it a little bit. Initially, my members newsletter was $150 a year and it was a reoccurring fee. And, you know, one person every other month might sign up for that. And then I dropped it to a one-time $17 fee. You know, I ended up making probably three times as much annually off of that because I saw it more as a tripwire than to get people into my system than as a big product. But I had to kind of sort through that. I didn't talk to people about it initially, and I wasted a lot of time because of that. But then now when we launch things, we talk to people about what they want. We do some kind of trial and error, like we're launching a conference in October 2019. And we just did a webinar that was specifically for people that wanted to volunteer at that conference. And if nobody had signed up for that webinar, then I may have kind of asked myself, well, if no one even wants to really get this discounted rate and volunteer 5 hours to get a super low rate, maybe this isn't going to be worth my time. But we had 50 people show up for the webinar that all were interested in volunteering. So then my next step is, well, now that they've heard about it, I've heard from them, I've heard their questions. If zero people actually pull out their credit card and pay to be a volunteer at this, well, that's going to give me some extra information too that, you know, maybe I shouldn't put as much time into this or maybe I should kill the project. So now I definitely have that lens of let's give it a whirl. Let's try to engage the audience. Let's talk to them, do our best guess at it, but let them know this is a draft and we want you to kind of help co-create it too. Here's our vision, but we definitely want it to meet your needs. Tell us what you want. And then in that co-creation process, we get people that are more excited about being a part of whatever it is we're launching.
Mm. So Joe, in hindsight, what have you learned about what works really well when you have a hunch that there is something that you can offer that'll solve somebody else's problem, and what actually works well and makes money at the same time?
Yeah, I would say that it's really the power of no. So when you have a core product, say it's a mastermind group that's recurring revenue every month for 6 months or 12 months, and let's just say it's $700 a month, and you're on a pre-consulting call with someone, or I'm on a pre-consulting call, if they say no to that and they say, you know, that just doesn't fit, well, then what next? So many people just will not try to make the sale on the phone call. They won't get a yes or no, because when you're on the phone, that's when they're most likely to say yes. And it's also when you're going to get the best information. So if I walk through a half hour pre-consulting call with someone, I say, I really think that Next Level Mastermind is going to be the best use of your time and money, and you're going to get the strongest ROI for that. And then they say, sorry, that doesn't fit the budget. I need to then have something that's going to be that downsell. And so being able to have a spectrum of services over time to say, oh, well, we actually have this other mastermind group. You know, it's $350 a month. It's run by somebody else, or it's less time on my part, but you're going to get some similar results. And then once you get those results, maybe you can bounce up to Next Level Mastermind. And then if they say, oh, that doesn't fit, having something along the spectrum that they can say yes to. So if they push back and say, sorry, that price is just too much, or that time commitment is too much, what do you have to offer below that? But then also, if they say no to it, what do they have? What do you have to offer above that? So it may be, hey, I want to move faster than that. I don't want to meet just twice a month. I want to also be able to meet with you weekly. Okay, so if we added consulting to that mastermind package as well, and you really wanted to move forward faster, let's bounce from $700 a month up to $1,500 a month, or $2,000 or $3,000 a month, so that you can go up or down from whatever your core recommendation is. That's going to help you keep people in your funnel, because if you're able to help them grow at a lower price point, they get results and kind of dip their toes in the water. They're the people that are most likely to upgrade into the next level and the next level and the next level, because you've actually helped them grow and scale.
That's really great advice. Jar, I'd love to go back actually and focus just on private practice alone.
Sure.
And dial it back a little. Do you think a therapist can run just a private practice and make consistent, stable, recurring revenue?
I do. I think there's some challenges long-term in regards to scalability with that. But I know lots of therapists that I've interviewed that have found very creative ways to continue to level up without working extra hours. So a couple of those kind of practical things are to evaluate which insurance companies you're on. So whether you're a chiropractor, massage therapist, counselor, life coach, whatever it is, if you do bill insurance — life coaches don't bill insurance, but most other medical professionals may bill insurance — to look at, okay, I'm on 10 insurances. Which one is the hardest to work with, pays the latest, and has the lowest fees, and in general is just a pain in the butt to work with? Those are the ones that you should be examining. Do I want to stay on this insurance? So maybe your average reimbursement rate is $115 per session, but there's one that's paying $87 per session, and they don't pay on time, and they don't give authorizations. We should probably look at removing yourself from that and just bill it out of network, and slowly doing that over time to increase your private pay. So that's one way to make more money and work the same amount of hours. As well, I think a lot of counselors in particular don't look at groups as a model, and you can often make significantly more per hour when you're running therapeutic groups. And next, if you really want to start to scale, looking at who you're referring out. If you're a solopreneur, you may want to look at bringing on an extra 1099 or W-2 that can see the people you're referring out. So say you just do couples counseling, but these couples often have kids that they need some help on parenting. You may want to bring in a 1099 that can see some of those kids, or maybe a play therapist, something that mirrors your specialty so that you're keeping those people in-house. That's where I see people really start to scale and make more money while still staying in the therapy space.
That's really helpful. Now, you have interviewed lots of therapists and people in private practice, and also some outside of private practice, on your podcast. So you've had a lot of conversations with people in this business space. What have you heard is most challenging to people as they're analyzing what's working and what's not working so well and what they want to change? What have you heard about the parts that are most challenging to them?
Yeah, I think that the most challenging phase I see is when people are getting some traction and they're in that 50,000 to 100,000 gross kind of range, because they know that things are working. They oftentimes haven't set up the best systems. They've bootstrapped it. But to get to that 200,000 or 300,000 or 400,000, they have to make some significant changes. And so we often talk about in cognitive behavioral therapy that, you know, the brain is similar to a road. And so we've got these well kind of worn roads. We've got the I-75, the Highway 101. It's a solid road. Now imagine you wanted to build a new road, a new habit. It's going to be a dirt road. Then it's going to get some gravel on it. You know, it's going to start to grow over time. And so as we do that in our brains, what happens is we need to stop driving that old road. And there's a point in our brains when we're developing a new habit and leaving behind an old habit that there's kind of some chaos where the old way of doing things doesn't work anymore and the new way isn't quite established. So our brains feel this chaotically. This happens when we try new parenting with our kids, when we try new things in our marriage, all sorts of different times in our life that this happens when we're developing new habits. Now, that time of chaos frequently happens for private practitioners when they're in that 50 to 100K range, because they're probably saying to themselves, you know, I have more than enough work for myself. But even if I'm at 100K, to get there, it's usually just hustle and seeing a ton of clients. And I can't live that way much longer. So I need to bring on some extra clinicians into the practice. And during that time of kind of internal chaos, you're letting go of a lot of things. You've had complete control of the business. You had complete control over the accounting, over kind of all of the forms, the intakes. But now you have to give up that control to a virtual assistant to answer your phones and hopefully reflect you. But you need to be able to teach them and give them feedback on how they can sound like you and match the brand. You're going to have to give up control over seeing every single one of the therapy clients. You have to give up control with your attorney and your accountant. And there's often the financial changes where, especially as your 1099s or W-2s start to take off, they oftentimes start making more than you are per hour because they're just taking a percentage split, whereas you're putting in all this extra time. And that's where I see people start to want to give up is, you know, they brought on one or two clinicians and they're paying for a VA to get the systems up. But once that system is established, then you can start to scale. And that's what people forget during that phase is, you know, to go from zero clinicians to two clinicians and a virtual assistant, that's a huge jump. But to go from 2 to 5 to 10, that's much easier. And so that chaotic period is the time when people need the most support, the most community, and the most resources so they don't give up and they really power through it to really start to scale.
Right. So let's actually talk about this in two parts. I'd love to hear your advice for those people that are in that period of chaos where they're going through some pretty significant change in their behavior and their habits. What is it that you would advise them to do separate from getting the resources and the tools? What is it so that they have the emotional and energy bandwidth to see this transformation through long enough to get the financial results so they get to the easier scaling part later on?
Yeah, I remember hearing something once. I still remember where I was driving when I heard this on the radio, and I don't remember who said it. A lot of people have said it in different ways, but they said, when you say no to one thing, you say yes to something else. And so for me, boundaries around what you want your life to look like is where we start everything with practice of the practice, because frequently we'll start a business, we'll get it going. All these opportunities come up where finally the marketing's working. Finally, all this lead generation's working. The Google ads are finally working and we're so happy about it. We take on all these new clients and then we're overwhelmed and we're like, what have I done for myself? I'm now working 50 or 60 hours a week. I don't want this. So we start with, well, what is the life that you want? Do you want to be able to go to your kids' soccer games? Do you want to be able to go on field trips with your kids at school? What kind of flexibility do you want? And how do we set up some boundaries around those things first and then say, we're going to put our business into that. And so that could be our private practice, our podcast, our ideas. It all has to fit within the life that we design first and then say, well, now what can I put into that? So I would have people start there because it's super easy for a business to just take off and that's great and you're successful. But if that's not the life you want, we need to first define the life.
And are you saying at the same time, you are going to be saying no to certain things based on the boundaries that you've put around parts of your personal life?
Absolutely. And so for me, I don't check any email or do anything work related from noon on Friday until Monday morning. Now, that then begs the question, what if somebody calls and needs counseling and they call at 3 o'clock on a Friday? Those are regular business hours when someone expects it to be open. Well, that means then I have to now create systems through people or through technology to be able to meet those needs. And so when you define that, then it's very clear, what do you need to give legs to? Well, I need to then have a virtual assistant that's going to be answering phones, that's going to be able to schedule. I'm going to then have to create these systems during the time that I am working so that that business can keep running. And so the how becomes very clear when we set these boundaries. So by saying no, you're able to then say, okay, here's the other things we do need to put time into, but it doesn't have to be my time anymore.
Right. So then part two to this question is, okay, so you've now created some time boundaries that will support the need for emotional and energy bandwidth. What are the most important tools and resources to support an expanding practice?
Yeah. So for me, it's really looking at my own energy levels. When am I at my best? How do I make sure I optimize that? And how do I support that? And so having community, I would say, is one of the biggest things, both socially, but then also within the work world, to be able to learn from what other people are doing. If we want to move forward faster, there's so many people out there in private practice or any business for that matter that have figured out hacks that nobody has the corner on knowledge. So we might as well learn from each other. And that's why, whether it's a mastermind group or a member community or something you set up locally, having other people that have a similar mindset. So for most counselors in private practice, finding people that have a business mindset, a marketing mindset, but they also want to grow the practice, that's really hard to find in their community. And so for us, a lot of that's done online, but depending on your business, that may be something you can find locally as well. And then also, I've found that having something that is continually inspiring me, that's new to work on, and giving some time to that helps me keep moving forward. And so even though I have the core businesses that are making the money, have the recurring revenue, I need to be working on some level of innovation. That's why we say income, innovation, influence, and impact. That innovation side is really strong inside of me. So even if I'm trying something and I end up killing it and it was a big waste of time, I need to be putting my time into new things that I'm inventing and creating, but that can't take over the core things. I have to have the core things set up so that those systems keep moving forward, that I know that, hey, those are the money makers and I also enjoy them. But on the other side, I need to be innovating so that I continue to stand out in the marketplace and fuel that creative side of my brain.
Sounds great. Sounds great. Joe, whom do you know personally who has been successful at smashing plateaus?
Right away when you asked that question, my friend Kelly Higdon jumps out. Kelly has done an amazing job in a similar space as me with launching this thing called Business School Bootcamp. She continues to innovate and create and do coaching and really just smash the plateau on so many different levels.
Kelly is actually a great example. I know Kelly.
Yeah, she's awesome.
And for all of you listening, I encourage you to check her out. Joe, what's coming up for you in the near future? What do we have to look forward to?
Yeah, the biggest thing that we're launching in October 2019 is when it's happening. We're doing an event called Killing It Camp, and it's aimed at people that have private practices. So that would be counselors, life coaches, consultants, accountants, anyone that has a private practice that really wants to grow and scale. And we're creating the conference for private practice. There isn't a conference right now that really zooms into how do you master private practice? How do you kill it in private practice? So we're doing Killing It Camp out at the YMCA of the Rockies. They've given us a great deal. What's awesome is they can scale up to 5,000 people there. So over time, we hope every year that Killing It Camp gets bigger and bigger. It's going to be 3 days of connecting with people and really learning how to kill it.
Wow, sounds great. And do you have a free gift that you'd like to offer our audience?
Yeah, we've put together over 30 resources to help people in private practice over at practiceofthepractice.com/resources. So whether you're just starting or you're growing and scaling, if you want to work on big ideas or want to just kind of dive into how to do Google My Business, things like that, we have over 30 resources there for your audience.
Joe, if someone wants to go deeper with what you've shared today or they want to learn more, where would they go?
Yeah, on practiceofthepractice.com, if they just go there, just click on start here, then it'll break down what phase of practice you're in, and then you can click on whatever phase you're at, and then that'll recommend kind of what the next step would be. And we'd love for you to just contact us. If you're wondering, you can always just email me, joe@practiceofthepractice.com also, and I'd love to help you figure out what's your best next step.
Sounds great. Well, Joe, thank you so much for taking the time to join us again on Smashing the Plateau. It's been great having you back. My guest today has been Joe Sanek, practice consultant and podcaster of Practice of the Practice. Thank you again, Joe, for joining us.
Thanks so much, David.
When you visit the Smashing the Plateau website at smashingtheplateau.com, you'll find a summary of each episode along with the links we mention on the show. Today, we discussed how Joe scaled his business and revenue, where he experienced the biggest plateaus, and how to get past chaos. What would you like to hear on Smashing the Plateau? Email me and let me know. That's david@smashingtheplateau.com, or click Get in Touch on our website. Please share this episode with friends and colleagues to help them smash the plateau. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show. I'll see you on our next episode.